Can the Obama administration make good on a promise to reverse segregated housing patterns in America that are a shameful legacy of the incomplete civil rights movement? Our friends at Retro Report report on some efforts to end housing discrimination back in the 1960s that moved black families into white suburbs only to discover intolerance was already part of the neighborhood. The Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. discovered this on a trip to Chicago back in 1966.
Back to the jungle, you guys! Back to the jungle! Go!
They're all black bastards!
I have never seen, even in Mississippi and Alabama, a mob as hostile and as hate-filled as I've seen in Chicago.
It would take another decade and a court order before black residents sequestered in public housing towers on the south side of Chicago could apply for vouchers to rent in middle-class white neighborhoods. Scott Michaels, Retro Report producer, reminds us of just how controversial it was to challenge housing policy in the industrial north in the 1960s.
1966 was the year when Martin Luther King came to Chicago, and the big issue that he was trying to deal with was segregated housing and segregated neighborhoods. And that sound, I think, very dramatically shows you the hostility from the white suburban areas around Chicago to the idea that African Americans could potentially move into their neighborhoods and become their neighbors.
I would go out in the morning to get in my car, and there would be rotten eggs thrown on the windshield and all over the car. The girls would tell me that people would call them names. They would call them nigger, baboon.
This woman by the name of Valencia Morris. How did you find her, and how did she contribute to your report?
Ms. Morris was in a housing mobility program in Chicago that started in the 1970s. And basically what it did was it gave vouchers to people who lived in the Chicago housing projects, African-American families, and helped them move to private apartments in the suburbs. But the catch was you had to live in a predominantly white middle-class neighborhood in the suburbs. And we spoke with Ms. Morris and a number of other families who were in the program who often were one of the only or maybe the only minority family in the entire community. And generally what they said was that they didn't always feel very welcome there.
Was this a successful program? And did it scale to the point where it really changed the numbers and the segregation battle lines in a city like Chicago?
I mean, it's a small program compared to the size of the problem, right? So there were about 7,000 families total. A number of them dropped out essentially and moved back to Chicago, I think in large part because of the feelings of hostility and isolation that you talked about. But for the people who stayed in the program, the research has shown that they did much better than people who stayed back in the projects in terms of earning more money and doing better in school and going to college.
Did this program and the limited success that it had become an argument for the dismantling of Cabrini-Green and the Robert Taylor homes and the huge centralized, concentrated apartment buildings that were the signature of the Chicago Housing Authority in this time?
It did. So the program was the outcome of a lawsuit called Cottrell, which was really the first major civil rights lawsuit to try to deal with segregated public housing. That lawsuit also officially brought an end to segregated public housing in the city. And it meant that if the city of Chicago was going to build new public housing in African-American neighborhoods, it was also going to have to start building housing in white or racially mixed neighborhoods.
Scott Michaels, Retro Report producer, reports on efforts to desegregate public housing in the city of Chicago back in the 1960s. Scott, thank you so much.
Thank you.